have an AA meeting. My name is Stephanie, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women tonight and listening later on AABlueChipSpeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that many of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them, too. I must have this thing. Now, our speaker tonight is Catherine, and everybody please welcome her. Thank you. Hey, everybody. My name is Catherine, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Lisa. I'm not sure where you are, but there you are for asking me to do this. I love AA. I really do. I was so tired when I got home from work today, and this is the last thing I wanted to do, but as soon as I walked in here, I started smiling, and that's what AA has done for me. My sobriety date is March 15th of 2009. I have a sponsor. I do sponsor other people. I'm always looking to sponsor some more, so if you're new, I'd love to help you out. My home group is the Fifth Tradition Group. And like I said, I love AA, I love service. This is probably my least favorite aspect of service, but, you know, this is what God has called me to do tonight, so I'm grateful to be here with y'all. And I am grateful to be an alcoholic, and more than anything, I'm grateful to know that and to believe that to my innermost self. I grew up in Atlanta. I loved my life. I had a great childhood. I have one sister. We were very competitive. Never felt like I really matched up to her. Lots of crazy perceptions in my head, but I had a great family, still do. I also have a lot of alcoholism in my family, but I didn't see a lot of that growing up. My grandfather was already in AA, and I never saw him drink, and my father actually came into the program after I did, and I didn't see a lot of his drinking. That happened. It was hidden, I guess. I don't know. But I do believe it's a genetic component to it, but I don't really care. I'm an alcoholic, and AA is my solution. Like I said, I had a wonderful childhood. I was involved in a lot of things, and drinking was one thing I was not going to do. I was a rule follower. My sister is not, and like I said, we were competitive, and that was one thing I could beat her at. her grades were slightly better. All the boys loved her. None of them liked me. She was a great athlete. I was mediocre, but I could be a rule follower. And so I really wasn't interested in alcohol. I hung out with all different kinds of people, all different groups. Went to same school for 13 years here, I love that school. I had a wonderful childhood experience. One thing I will say is I had a serious medical illness come up. When I was in high school, I lost the ability to walk and ended up in a wheelchair for a little bit, and don't know what caused that. I'm grateful that I have a medical device that has enabled me to walk again. But I knew throughout this period, it looked like I had a very progressive neurological disorder. I had a lot of faith in God at the time, and I just knew everything was going to be okay. And I got a lot of compliments, I guess. The school that I went to kind of let me come and go as I wanted to. Everybody called me a hero, which, of course, it's nice to hear, but I just kind of was living my life, and I accepted it on life's terms, and I knew that one day there would be a solution, and sure enough, there was. But after I graduated from high school, I went off to a small college in Virginia, and that summer, I had my first drink. Well, that's not true. There was one night I pretended to drink because I was a little, I was at a party with some other people and I wanted to fit in. So I had a sip of a beer and I think I pretended to be drunk. And but after I graduated from high school, during that summer, I did drink a little bit. It was fun. I drink very differently from my second drink, if you will, on. I drank to get drunk, and I kept on drinking. I love, and more about alcoholism, when it talks about controlling and enjoying our drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. I didn't want to control it. Controlling and enjoying did not go together for me. So it was just a little, you know, some fun partying in that summer between my senior year in college. But when I went out to college, I was lost. I was alone. I started walking again, but they had put me in this upperclassman dorm. And I felt totally insecure. I was scared. I didn't know I was scared, but I was terrified. I know that now after having done fourth and fifth step. But I knew that I liked to drink. I was very driven. I wanted to go to medical school, so I started off as a neuroscience major. And but I went to all the parties, and I loved it. And so I quickly switched from getting a BS in neuroscience to a BA in psychology. And but like I said, I was a blackout drinker from the beginning. One of my friends even said to me, "You drink so much, I guess I appeared to look like I was doing okay, seemingly had a high tolerance. I always made it back to my dorm room by myself. Sometimes I even helped my other friends, but I'd get to the dining hall the next day and say, where'd we go after this? And people ask me, you don't remember? No. But I didn't have a lot of consequences. I did well enough in school to go on. And I look back today, and I am so grateful because some stories I've heard and some just being around the rooms long enough to know what I could have experienced, God was looking out for me the whole time. Because I could have put I did put myself in some very dangerous situations, and thankfully I ended up unscathed. But after I graduated from college, I moved to D.C. A lot of people from the school I went to kind of transitioned down to D.C. My sister was living there. I thought that would be fun. Still didn't really know what I wanted to do with my life. Like I said, I had wanted to go to medical school. But when I graduated, I just kind of was like, all right, we'll go to D.C. My sister was writing for a trade publication covering the pharmaceutical industry, so they just gave me a job, the same office, and I was a writer and an editor for a publication covering the medical device industry, which is fitting for me today in my life. So I got there, still going out drinking, blacking out, but I wasn't an everyday drinker yet, but I still had that allergy that the talks about in the doctor's opinion. If I was going to have one, there was no telling when I was going to stop. One of the things that when I was in college, when I came home, you know, for breaks, my parents would say, "You want a glass of wine with dinner?" I tried that once. It was awful. And so I... At that time, I did have a choice. I could say, no, thank you, I don't want that. I remember a friend's bridesmaid brunch. They were serving drinks. I knew I didn't want wine because I wanted to get hammered. And at that time, I did have a choice. I could say, I'm not going to do this. And now I did not have a choice, and I'm going to have wine and then stop. But I wasn't anywhere seeing that yet. I just knew that if I wasn't able to get wasted, I didn't see the point in drinking. So when I was working in D.C. and writing for this publication, I was still, drinking was fun. I was a party girl, you know, on the weekends, whatever. We actually, it was a weekly publication, and we would sit there editing on Friday with beer, which doesn't make a lot of sense, but it worked out all right. And then we'd go out afterwards. But that was when there was a little shift in my drinking. I found that I was really stressed over my writing. I love to write, but I've always been a perfectionist. I couldn't finish my article, so I would take my work home, start drinking, and that would be able to relax my mind enough to where I could do my job. And I laugh about that today because it's funny to me. But at the time, it was necessary. I needed it. I didn't see that alcohol was a problem. And it really, it wasn't interfering with my life all that much. Didn't stand out to anybody else. But I... couple of years after being there, my college boyfriend moved back to New Orleans, where he was from, to go to med school, and I decided to move down there, too, because we were going to see if we were going to make this relationship work. Within a few, I don't know, my parents were down there helping me move in, and I was we were all finished, I was driving them to the airport, in a Mini Cooper and crossed 5 lanes of traffic both directions and was diagnosed. And then I drove into a bank and totaled my car and was diagnosed with epilepsy. And I was lost. And at that point, like I said, with my previous medical condition, I always had this faith in God, knew everything would be okay. I was angry. And I was not really willing to accept my epilepsy. I'm very, very fortunate. My seizures were always very small, and you really had to be looking at me or talking to me to know that I was having one, but I was ashamed. And people would ask if I was okay right after I had a seizure, and I would basically give you the finger and tell you I was fine. It wasn't until I came into AA that I really started to accept that. But one of the things that my doctor said, my neurologist, when I was diagnosed with epilepsy is you should not drink. And I said, no, thank you, and kept going with my life. And that was the summer of 2008 and that I moved down there. And my drinking really took off. I didn't know what to do. At that point, I was working at a school doing development, and I was a coach, and, you know, I kind of thought I had it made. I was there with this boy. We were going to get married, and everything came crumbling down when I got that epilepsy diagnosis. Thank God I totaled my car, because I'm not sure if I would have not driven or not. I just was in total denial of everything. But I had a roommate, and when I moved to New Orleans, and one day I got drunk and passed out with the door open. She didn't like that very much, so I quickly got my own place. and I kind of went back and forth between living in my own place and staying over at my boyfriend's house. But drinking wasn't fun anymore. He was busy with school. I didn't really know anybody else. In New Orleans, you could walk everywhere, so I could go get what I needed and get drunk. I didn't do it every day, but I woke up one morning. I did it enough. Way too much, especially when the doctor says you shouldn't do it. And I really didn't want to keep having seizures, but so one would think I might follow the doctor's orders, and I did not. And I had a couple of really scary episodes. I woke up one morning, as far as I know, I never left my place, did not have anybody over, and I had not one, but two very swollen black eyes, and I have no idea what happened. I also woke up one morning covered in blood, and I have a scar on my forehead today. I was sitting alone in my apartment drinking, so the fun was gone by this point. I did not think it was a problem yet. Just wasn't really willing to look at it, I guess. I did start doing some things like putting my trash in my neighbor's trash because, God forbid, the garbage collectors think I'm drinking too much. I don't know. I was paranoid, you know, if my parents come to see me, they'll find a bunch of stuff. So that was another reason to throw my stuff out in my neighbor's trash. When I woke up with the two black eyes, I called out of work for a couple of weeks. And when I went back to work, I told my boss, that I had to let her in and let her know that I had a brain tumor. They figured out that's why I was having seizures. But I did not want my parents to know that. And I needed some support from her. But I didn't want anybody else to know. And that is not true. I did not have a brain tumor. Was never diagnosed with a brain tumor. But that made sense to me. And she called my parents. And she told them she was worried about me. And she wasn't sure what was going on with me, but she told them she was concerned. So April of 2009, I come home to visit my parents, I think, and catch up with my high school crowd and, you know, party. I actually quit drinking for a little bit. I put the drink down because I was a little bit scared and thought I should. But I thought I had proven to myself, okay, I'm all right. So when I get there, we'll celebrate. Everything's going to be fine. And my parents picked me up and at the airport and drove me straight to Beechford Hospital. And I was not real happy about that. they dropped me off. Like I said, I was a rule follower. I don't remember any of this. I was sober when I walked in there, but I was cussing everybody out. I'm really upset with my parents. So I spent, not that much time at Beechford. I was not honest with them about my drinking. They caught on anyway, and suggested I go to, inpatient rehab. So I went to Breakthrough Recovery, and it's been a long time. I want to back up and say it's been a while since I've been in this room, and I've been a part of Intergroup for a long time now, and it's really nice to be back here. Breakthrough is where I started out. They brought us here. I have a lot of memories of early sobriety in here, and I'm really grateful to everybody because I was not the most honest, and people were just always welcoming and excited, you know, happy to see us. And I did not think I had a problem. I really didn't. When I first got here, the delusion was so big. I mean, I actually asked somebody to sponsor me for my depression because I kind of liked you. As soon as I came in here, I kind of got on with the vibe of the people. I saw some happy people, and I kind of understood some of the feelings that you felt of not being, you know, quite as good or being lonely, prey to misery and depression. That was me. And I felt like I could relate and y'all were easy to talk to, but I did not want to admit that I was an alcoholic. And so I asked this woman to sponsor me for my depression, and she told me that she was sorry, but that she really needed to focus on her work with alcoholics. And I was not happy, but today I understand that, and it makes a lot of sense to me, and I'm grateful that she stuck with the primary purpose. I don't know, I kind of floundered around. I was at Breakthrough. I was with a bunch of younger kids. I was 27 when I got sober, but when I started out, I was in the 24-hour, you know, surveillance with a bunch of teenagers, and I to this day, do not know why I stayed. I had money back then. I could have easily walked out of there and hopped on a plane. And all I can say is that the God that I was not really on board with was watching over me and keeping me there, because I don't know why I stayed. I got very close to a few people in that recovery residence, and I'm really good friends with them today. My best friend Erica is sitting over here. She was in my wedding a few years ago. And so I eventually kind of said, all right, I'm liking AA. People are nice. And I started seeing some other people that were actually doing the work getting better. And so I asked my sponsor, my current sponsor, I said, I don't know if I'm an alcoholic or not, but I need help. And she said, let's go through this book and find out. And I am so grateful she did. I, you know, a lot of people approach people in different ways. But if she had asked me if I was willing to go to any lengths to get sober, I would have said absolutely not. Because when I told her I wasn't sure if I was an alcoholic or not, I wasn't sure if I was ready to quit drinking or not. I knew I needed my health to get better, and I knew I needed to figure out some things and put it down for a little bit, but I also, I'm just being completely honest, at that time I didn't see how I could possibly get married without having a champagne toast, and I knew I was going to get there. And so I wasn't sure I wanted to quit drinking. Thankfully, Kathy and I met once a week. We read through the book. She read it to me. And I found myself, in the book. And then I went to a lot of speaker meetings. Like I said, this NAVA Blue Chip speaker meeting has been, important to me throughout my sobriety. And also, of course, at the Fifth Tradition Group, our speaker meeting as well. That's how I figured out that I belong here, is by finally identifying with enough people and stop seeking out the differences. Because what I originally did, you know, with my family was look at my uncle, who had pretty much lost a leg and been on life support several times, and heard about some other stories in my family living under bridges. That was my idea of an alcoholic, not someone who, once you start drinking, can't stop, and once you stop, can't stay stopped. So as soon as my sponsor explained that to me, I thought, that is absolutely me. And I am so grateful today that I still believe that, and that I know that is my truth, because it has solved all of my problems. So anyway, I was in and around AA for almost a year without doing anything, and I got worse. I am grateful the obsession to drink left me pretty quickly. I didn't want to drink, but I was, all the agnostic promises, you know, lonely, isolated, depressed, just being in AA was not enough for me. I had to get a sponsor and go through the steps. And once I did, I was on fire. And for the most part, I have been on fire for the last 13 years, and I'm incredibly grateful for that. Kathy and I we would meet on once a week. She would read the book to me, and when the book said to do something, we would do it. It took me a little bit. Like I said, I had this wonderful relationship with God, and I was kind of lost that. I was kind of angry. I didn't realize I had a resentment. I still believed in God, but I wasn't sure that was going to be my fix. But I remember when Kathy, it came time to do the third step prayer, we were at Starbucks, and she said, you know, we don't care what other people think about us anymore, so let's get on our knees and say this prayer. And I was kind of like, I still care what people think about me, but I also, looking around like we're crazy, but I also really care what my sponsor thought about me. So I didn't argue and got on my knees and said the third step prayer in Starbucks. and went on to work the rest of the steps. She gave me 2 weeks to do my fourth step because she said I don't think I was working at the time, but she said if she gave me any longer, I wouldn't get it done. And of course I did it, I think the night before we were doing my fifth step. So it was not the best fourth step I could have done, but it was enough to see my character defects. I had no idea how much of my life was driven by fear. I knew that I was, I could look back and see where I was selfish and a lot of self-seeking and a huge ego, a lot of pride. But I had no idea how much was driven by fear, and that was eye-opening for me. I've since gone back and done several other inventories and kind of dug in a little deeper. Actually, did one recently, and it's, the same things. I wish everything went away immediately, but one of my character defects that I struggle with is dishonesty by omission, and stemming from that is fear. I don't like having those hard conversations, and so I will just let something, get a resentment grow stronger and stronger when it would be so much easier if I just would communicate. And I see that over and over again when I go back and write inventories. But, there have been improvements along the way. One of the things that was really important to me was going back and making my amends. I didn't really think I had done a lot of damage, but I had scared, making amends to my parents was pretty easy. They were very easygoing with everything, but I had scared that boss a lot. And when I reached out to make amends to her, first of all, after I did my fourth step, my sponsor asked if I left anything out. I said, nope. And she said, pray about it and call me in an hour. And I did not tell her about the brain tumor that I did not have, until I called her back. And that was one of the amends that I was not ready to make right away. I was absolutely terrified about that one. But when I called my boss, she said how scared she had been for me, but that she knew somebody that I might be able to help. And that was her husband. And she was blown away. She had no idea I was an alcoholic, absolutely none. But she said something had changed. She didn't call me back at first. And so when a few months later I got that call back, I thought, uh-oh. But she said something had changed in my voice, and there was somebody I might be able to help. There was another amends that I made. This was not early on, but I got a really nice watch from my parents when I graduated from college. And I had a seizure moved out of Breakthrough. I moved in with my friend Erica temporarily. she and her husband were nice enough to take me in for a little bit. And I started working at Starbucks. And at first I was really ashamed of that. And then I realized I was having fun. And I, my parents also were kind of giving me the nudge, you know, what's going on? Why, you've been to college, why aren't you moving out of here? And I said, well, I'm having fun and I'm not asking you for money. And when I look back now, it was exactly where I needed to be. I was in the hospital or had surgery for at least one surgery or one hospitalization for the first decade. I think I'm about to be at the, gosh, I think tomorrow marks 2 years of not spending the night in the hospital. No, 4 years, I'm sorry. But anyway, I was working at Starbucks. I had a seizure. I lost my watch. I lied to my dad about it. And it was, and I was able to, I don't know why. He wouldn't have been mad at me. I had a seizure. There was nothing I could do. But like I said, that dishonesty by omission, I didn't want to let him know. So I would always say, oh, I want to, you know, measure my steps. I'm wearing this watch instead. But I made amends to him December of 2019, and that was one of the most powerful amends I made. My dad got COVID early on and passed away in June of 2020, and that was very hard for me. I was a daddy's girl. I loved him. He was my hero. But what was really cool is that I had gotten to make that amends to him. And he had come into the program. I can't remember when he came in, but he struggled a little bit. but we've got to do this deal together, which was really, really neat. And very special, something I will cherish forever. I am so grateful I made that amends to him. My mom said something, she found something after he passed away, or told me about a memory she had, I don't know, but that we had the best conversation we'd ever had that day, and it was completely worth it. So whenever I think about people being scared of amends or whatever, I can't tell you that one changed my life. And I didn't have too many hard amends, and that probably was the most difficult one just because of who my dad was to me, and I had lied to him for so many years. Got a little bit off track there. So I went on, like I said, I was in the hospital a lot in sobriety, early sobriety. I couldn't drive. AA was here for me. There were times when I had to have somebody with me around the clock, and it was people from AA. Everybody showed up. I met my husband in my home group. He was there for me. He got me going to an epilepsy support group meeting, and as a result of that, going to that meeting, I ended up changing doctors, and I had surgery a couple of years ago. I had a device put in my brain, like I hinted at when I was talking about writing about the medical device industry. I have not one but two medical devices. I would not be walking, and I would not be seizure-free without these medical devices. I feel like I'm a little too young at 41 to have two medical devices, but I'm extremely grateful for them and so grateful for the way AA has showed up in my life every time that I was in the hospital. You know, I had to get rides to meetings, and I had to make a network. My sponsor, one of the things she wanted me to do when I first got sober was call other women. I was not interested in that. But I am so grateful for that because it, and not only did it enable me to get to meetings, but I got a network of women that would show up when I was in the hospital. I absolutely love AA. I'm extremely grateful. One of the things, that the Big Book talks about is, the opportunity to recreate your life. And that's what I AA has enabled me to do. Like I said, I know I'm jumping around all over the place. I'm really tired. I'm sorry. But I worked at Starbucks. I thought that was going to be just a short-term thing back into my career. I stayed there for 7 years. But they paid for everything, all of my surgeries and hospitalizations. That was the best health insurance I've ever had. And once my health got to a little bit more stable place, one of my friends knew that I was interested in looking for, you know, getting out of Starbucks, doing something different. But I wasn't moving my feet. My sponsor, her big thing that she always reminds me, it's not what your mouth is doing, it's what your feet are doing. What are you doing to get out there and look for a job? And I had started talking about wanting to be a teacher. And my friend Rosie that I met through my epilepsy, she said she worked at a school. They were looking for a parapro. And I got an interview and went on to work at, the first school I worked at was Notre Dame Academy in Duluth. And I did that for a year and a half, and the school that I went to here in Atlanta reached out to me and offered me a job in the preschool, and I wasn't too sure about that. I did it in special education in the first year and a half of my teaching, and I loved that. But I also really close to the high school I went to, and so I took that chance, and I have since moved on to Mount Vernon Academy, still doing the preschool, but it's really neat, you know, all the things that I feel like I learned in AA, how to be a friend, how to be a worker, among worker, you know, getting out of self, I get to do that today with these young kids. And it's one of the biggest blessings of my life. I don't know where else, how I would have gotten there if it wasn't for AA. I love this program. I am, for the most part, fully committed to it. I started pulling back. You know, I've always been involved in a lot of service within my home group. But when COVID caused the shutdown and we started meeting on Zoom, I definitely pulled back from AA a little bit. You know, it was more fun to kind of watch the Braves, well, not recently, but over the computer screen while a meeting was going on. And a lot of blessings happened for me. I always wanted a dog. Well, not only did I, first of all, I stopped having seizures. I couldn't afford a car right away, but then I was able to buy one. Wanted a dog for years. We have not one, but two amazing dogs. Peter and I were able to buy a place to live in. You know, all these blessings were coming as I was pulling back from AA. And that's a little bit scary because once things reopened again, you know, I suddenly didn't feel as connected to my home group. And maybe, you know, maybe I am too tired and should just stay home tonight. And I felt it. I am grateful. To be back in it. And I'm really grateful for Intergroup because, like I say, I've been involved in that for a long time. I am the current Intergroup chair, which was not something I wanted to do. But, you know, I feel like nobody else stood for the position. And so here I am. I didn't think I would have the time to do it. But God gives whenever I'm asked to do something, God just makes it all work out. I don't understand how it works. It just does. But that service, thank God, kept me connected enough to AA and willing to dive back into my home group. And I kid you not, y'all are going to think I'm the biggest loser, but the most recent time, or my first time back on setup or cleanup, I can't remember. I was cleaning out a coffee pot. I'm back there, like, bouncing around. I love cleaning coffee pots. It's crazy, but that's how I get to see my people, you know. If I'm there early or I stay late, I'm connecting with y'all and maintaining those relationships, getting out of myself. So I'm incredibly grateful for AA. I don't know where I would be without it today. And I'm so grateful. Like I said, I've met my husband in my home group. When we got married, my champagne toast didn't cross my mind. Not the least bit interested in that. But we sure did have a blast at our wedding. And I owe everything I have to AA, and I'm just so grateful to be here, and thank you all for listening.
This page, the emptiness of my heart, this lost and lonely feeling wants to tear me apart. I take off my coat, but I can't sit down, no. I'm looking at myself from the other side of town. I'm just trying to be somebody like me. Maybe someday I'll run into myself. I'm just trying to be somebody like me. I know you ain't gonna love nobody else. I tear off another page and I throw it away while I wait for nothing to happen day after day. Take the skirt off my back, take the shoes off my feet, kind of feels invisible down underneath. I'm just trying to be somebody like me. Maybe someday I'll run into myself. I'm just trying to be somebody like me. Against the white noise coming from my telephone. Had to make my choice. Had to take it off the hook. Somebody's tapping at my window, but I just don't wanna look.